This week is my favorite week of the year. I love Thanksgiving. I say that every year, but I just love Thanksgiving. I love everything about Thanksgiving, and people often say, well, of course you love Thanksgiving. You don't have to cook. But I do. I do a chunk of the cooking. I enjoy everything about Thanksgiving, and everybody has their own little family traditions that go around Thanksgiving, but almost everybody has some form of saying why we are thankful, why we feel blessed in this year that we are looking back on. And some of us will be thankful, will feel blessed, not because it's been a great year, because frankly, there are a lot of people here who maybe have had health difficulties or have had some kind of significant financial reversal, or who perhaps are having just epic relational dysfunction in their circle of relationships. And it's not been a year you want to relive. But you do feel thankful because you believe that God has sustained you through the midst of all that. So you're being thankful because he's just kept your head above water. And then there are going to be other people who, really, it's been a great year. I mean, you look back and everything is just pegging out great for you. And you're just thankful because you're just in such a season of peace and flourishing. But frankly, for most of us, it's going to be a mixture of the two, isn't it? I mean, we're going to look back and things haven't always been great this year, but God's been with us. And then we're going to see some things where you know, God has just been unbelievably beneficent to us, showing us great blessing in the things that we can actually touch. And I want, as you go through that exercise this next week, this Thursday, I want to give you a little assignment. I want you, as you're thinking about your blessings and why you're thankful, I want you to ask yourself, why have I been blessed? Why has God blessed me this past year? I think many times we can identify the blessing, but we never stop and ask ourselves, why has God done this? Why has God blessed me? And today, that's what we're going to focus on. We're going to answer the why question behind our blessing. Would you please find Psalm 67 in your copies of God's Word? We are in this month a brief series of messages from the Psalms, looking at songs from the Psalms of thanks. And today we are going to look at why we should be thankful for purpose, the purpose behind our blessings in this wonderful little psalm, Psalm 67. Having found it, would you stand, please, as we honor the Lord as we read from His Word, Psalm 67. To the choir master with stringed instruments, a psalm, a song. May God be gracious to us and bless us and make His face to shine upon us, Selah. That Your way may be known on the earth, Your saving power among all the nations. Let the peoples praise You, O God. Let all the peoples praise You. Let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for You judge the peoples with equity and guide the nations upon earth, Selah. Let the peoples praise You, O God. Let all the peoples praise You. The earth has yielded its increase. God, our God, shall bless us. God shall bless us. Let all the ends of the earth fear Him. May God add a blessing to the reading of His Word. You may be seated. Now, these psalms that we read from are Hebrew poetry set to music. That's probably something that you've already figured out, because quite frankly, essentially what we do with poetry in this modern age is set it to music. That's where our songs come from. But these were not just popular songs. These were songs that were used in worship. So poems about God set to music. And the Hebrews, like we do in the English language, would use the rhythms and the sounds of their language to build their poetry. And sometimes they would use the structure of the poem itself to communicate the intent of the poem being written. You've seen some of this. You've picked up on it. You may not just have put two and two together. How many times have you been reading the Old Testament, like in the Psalms, Proverbs, sometimes in the prophecies of the books of the prophets? How many times have you been reading it and say, "Man, this is repetitive"? Let's be honest, unscrew the halo for a little bit. Of course, I mean, you think, man, this is very repetitive. Well, the reason that it's repetitive is because of a certain kind of structural device that the Hebrews used to build their poetry called parallelism. What they would do is they'd take what for us is a verse. Verses didn't come along until the 16th century, but they would take what for us is a verse, and you'll notice that the first line of that verse says something, and then many times the second line of that verse will say the exact same thing in a slightly different way. It is a way of emphasizing a point that the Hebrews use. So that's called parallelism. But another one of the structural devices that happens all the time in Hebrew poetry is something that kind of looks like this. It looks like a funnel on top, and then it looks like an inverted funnel on the bottom. And what happens is that the Hebrew poet would balance and counterbalance the structure, actually, of the psalm. So you'll have a thought that opens the psalm, and it's counterbalanced at the end of the psalm. And then you get a little bit deeper, and there's a thought and a counterbalance until you move to the middle. And when you get in the middle, you have the point of the poem itself. I like to say it's X marks the spot. You know, when you get right there in the middle, you'll find the point that is trying to be communicated. And that is exactly what is taking place in Psalm 67. I want to show it to you. You'll be able to see this now that you're aware of it. You see, at the beginning, it says, "May God be gracious to us and bless us and make his face to shine upon us." And then it says, Selah, which we believe is a word which was meant to trigger people to be quiet for a moment, reflect on what has just been said. He says that you may be known on earth, your saving power among the nations. So you have in verse 1, asking God to be gracious and to bless. 2, so that the saving power would be known to all the nations. Now look at verse 6. The earth has yielded its increase. God, our God, shall bless us. So there's that idea of blessing again. Why? God shall bless us. Let all the nations of the earth fear him. So you see how that same thing that's in verses 1 and 2 shows up in verses 6 and 7. And you can see it even more clearly in verse 3 where it says, "Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you." And in verse 5, the exact same words. So what you have is the psalmist framing for us as he brings it down his point. And the point of this psalm, if anybody were to ever ask you, what was he trying to say, you can see it in verse 4. "Let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for you judge the peoples with equity and guide the nations upon the earth." The word nations in the language of the Hebrews is the word that is translated more into modern English as Gentiles. Let those who do not have the Jewish heritage, let those who do not know the God of the Jews be glad. Why? Because in the blessing of his covenant people Israel, they will see that the gods that they worship are false and that the God that we worship is the one true God. And so as you stop and think about it, he is starting to tell us why we are blessed, the purpose behind the blessing that we receive as God's people. You see, the purpose behind the blessings that we receive, every single one of them, is evangelistic. Think about that with me. What do we do with our blessings? Well, we build little altars around them, and we take really nice care of them, and we go back and we remember them, and we get sentimental about that time when God did that thing. And we occasionally will tell other believers in Jesus when it comes testimony time in church or in Sunday school class, where we say, "Well, there was that one time where God did that thing," and we share it with one another. But God is showing us here that when God does something for us to bless us, the purpose ultimately of that blessing is not to build an altar around it and have a little holy huddle of other people just like you. The purpose of that blessing is to run it up the flagpole of our lives and let it stand in the stiff breeze of the Holy Spirit blowing through our lives and saying, "Look at what God has done. Those of you who doubt him, those of you who don't know him, look at what God has done. Don't you want to know this God?" The reason that God has blessed you this past year, whether it has been just keeping your head above water, or it's because you're redlining everything and everything's going great, the reason that God has blessed you this year is because there's the nations around you Those that don't know the one true God. Neighbors, co-workers, family members who will come in this week for Thanksgiving. People around the world who don't know that our God is God. That's why you've been blessed. That is the purpose behind your blessing. And so if then the purpose of our blessing is evangelistic, what can we do? How can we bless others? How can we bless the nations, the people that don't know that our God is God? Well, two things I want to show you very quickly. First, bless the nations with your story. You have a story to tell. If you follow Jesus as Savior, you have been redeemed from the vileness and the wickedness of your sin by a merciful and loving God who has made you through the blood of His own Son right with Him forever so that you can rule and reign, Scripture says, with Him forever and ever. That is a remarkable story, and people need to hear that story. Your story can set people free. Many years ago, I got the opportunity to go to China on a mission trip with Julie. And we spent almost 2 weeks there. And on our way out of China, we stopped in Hong Kong so that we could spend a couple of days there and just get to see that beautiful, amazing city. And the people that were showing us around picked us up at our hotel, and we were walking through downtown Hong Kong, and they steered us into a Buddhist temple. And I'll never forget what I saw when I was in that Buddhist temple. There was a lady in her late 50s, early 60s, rocking back and forth in front of a carved image of one of the deities in Buddhist thought. Deity's not the right word, but go with me. And rocking back and forth in front of this image, begging that spirit, begging the Buddha for something. I don't know what it was. But she was obviously in deep sorrow and pain. She was crying. And you could tell by her actions that she thought, I have to pry from that carved image a blessing. Because God, the gods, don't want to willingly give anything to me. And I thought to myself, I've got the story that can set that person free. I've got the story of a God who isn't reluctant to bless, but who is eager to bless through the blood of His Son, Jesus. I have the story that could set that person free. I didn't have the capacity to speak her language. She didn't have the capacity to understand mine. But that has stayed with me because the entire world, whether they worship in a Buddhist tradition or an Islamic tradition or don't worship at all, is slave to the idea that either the gods that exist or the forces of the universe have to be begged for mercy. And my story of redemption through Jesus is the story of simply asking and surrendering. You've got that story. You've got the story of your salvation. But you have a story beyond that. A story how, when people are going through difficult times thinking, how can I get through? A story where you can say, well, here's how God sustained me in a very difficult time. And I was able to be glad in it. You have that story to tell. You have the story to tell when people are being blessed materially thinking, boy, I'm at the top of my game to say, you know what? I've been blessed too, but let me say something to you. All of that's going to burn up and blow away. There's something that is more important. We have a story to tell of God's rescue of us and His continuing work in our lives that can set people free. You've been blessed so that you can bless people with your story. But you have also been blessed in a way that will allow you to be able to bless the nations with your stewardship. Bless the nations with your stewardship. We are all more materially blessed than almost all of the rest of the world. Now, we may not be materially blessed in this room equally, but we are all materially blessed. And what have we done with it? We have tended to turn inward with it. And I am not preaching at you. I am sitting in the crowd and receiving that word to myself. I have tended to turn inward with it. But I have an opportunity in the material blessing that God has given me to bless the nations so that they can be glad in the gospel. You say, well, how is that? Let me tell you how. Through funding missions, through using the resources that God has given me to actually go to other places, to use my resources that God has given me beyond myself, but instead to see them as a tool to advance the gospel. Do you know you get an opportunity to do that each and every week at Blue Valley Baptist Church if you participate in the offering? You see, we are Southern Baptist. You may not have known that. There are lots of Baptists, but we are Southern Baptist. And frankly, there are some things we get really, really wrong. I'm going to tell you that right now. There are some things, when I see a guy show up on a TV channel, I'm just going, you know, please don't say you're a Southern Baptist. Please don't. Keep that a secret. Keep that a secret. There are some things we get wrong, but let me tell you one of the things we get right. We get missions right. You realize every single Sunday when you give, a portion of the money that you give here is sent to the Kansas-Nebraska Convention of Southern Baptists in Topeka. And the Kansas-Nebraska Convention of Southern Baptists is a network of 400 or so churches in Kansas and Nebraska. And they use that money that we give at Blue Valley Baptist Church to do a lot of really cool things. Do you realize there are 100,000 college students in our two-state area? And through the Kansas-Nebraska Convention of Southern Baptists, we are able to fund collegiate ministries. If you attended or have a child who attends Kansas State University, Christian Challenge is funded through your giving on Sunday morning at Blue Valley Baptist Church. Christian Challenge and a whole host of schools that way. Your money is used in that way. We are able to have our money used by the Kansas-Nebraska Convention of Southern Baptists to promote church health. Out in western Nebraska, we have guys, a friend of mine named Joel Wentworth. He is a bivocational pastor for multiple congregations. He's like an Old Test or an Old West circuit rider. And he goes around various churches preaching at them so that these communities out in western Nebraska will have pastors. Who's going to take care of Joel emotionally? Who's going to take care of Joel spiritually? We are, through the work of the Kansas-Nebraska Convention of Southern Baptists. Do you realize that there are counties in our two-state region that have no church in the county where people can hear the gospel of Jesus Christ, representing almost 500,000 people? I want you to think about what I just said. In our two-state region, there are 500,000 people that don't have a gospel-preaching church in their county. Southern Baptists, through the Kansas-Nebraska Convention of Southern Baptists, are working to support the start of church plants in those areas. And then the money goes from the Kansas-Nebraska Convention of Southern Baptists to the Southern Baptist Convention. And that money is distributed to a lot of different entities, but half of it goes to the International Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. Now, I'm not just saying this because I've been a Southern Baptist most of my life. I'm saying this because the historical data bears it out. The most amazing mission-sending organization in the history of Christianity is the International Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. If it had not been for that mission-sending organization, there would be places that would be still gospel dark in our world. We send more missionaries around the world as a Southern Baptist Convention than any single mission-sending organization that has ever existed in 2,000 years of Christianity. And you fund that as you give on Sunday morning. That's part of how you bless people with your stewardship. There's another way. If you're Southern Baptist, you know that every time a Christmas tree goes up, we start hearing about Lottie Moon. All right? Lottie Moon was a missionary to inland China back at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, whose lifestyle of sacrifice inspired Southern Baptists to give sacrificially every Christmas to support international missions. Millions of dollars is going to be collected. Blue Valley Baptist Church is seeking to collect $50,000 that we will send to the International Mission Board, and that money will go directly to fund missionaries around the world. Why are we blessed as a church? Why are we blessed as a church? Why are we blessed as individuals? Because we have a story that we can tell that will bless others. And we have collectively resources that we can pool. that will allow us to be able to get the gospel in places where it otherwise wouldn't be. That's why we're blessed. That is the purpose behind our Thanksgiving. And this morning we're celebrating what we have been able to do with our story and what we've been able to do with our resources. And out of the things that have taken place over this past year or so, two stories stand out. And we want to share those stories with you this morning. I'm going to ask Carol Deem if she would come. Carol's in here. So there's Carol. And I'm going to ask Rob and Stacy McCulley if you guys would come on up. There are things that we have been doing that some of you have been a part of, but and you're going to hear about them right now, but there have been two specific stories that honestly have just made us as a staff, as we've heard them this past year, go, yay, God. And we're going to let those stories be shared with you right now. Carol is a participant in a ministry that we have been a part of for a long time called Cooking with the King. Carol, why don't you share real quickly what Cooking with the King is?
Well, we work with the boys and girls at the Juvenile Detention Center in Olathe, Kansas. They're teenagers. And we go in on Saturdays, every Saturday, and give them a short cooking lesson. So then they eat what they've cooked, and then we talk to them about Jesus.
All right. And having participated in the Cooking with the King, one of the things that kind of is frustrating and that the workers share with one another from time to time is this doing any good? Because we never get any feedback. We just never get to follow these kids. We never get to hear again from these kids. And so you always leave wondering, has that been worth it? Well, we've learned, haven't we,
yes,
that it is. Why don't you share the story about one of our workers?
Okay. This is actually Sonia's story. Sonia Moriera.
Yeah, Moriera.
And she's a
attends the Ridgeview campus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she, about a month before this happened, she was talking to the Lord and asking him. She wanted to quit because she never saw any results. And, well, it takes one Saturday a month. But her first language is Portuguese. So she told the Lord, somebody else could do this better and speak better and be understood better. So as it happened, she had to call an Uber driver one Saturday morning. And she said she never does that. She'd never done it before. So the driver was chatty and friendly, so she started telling him about her family and her church. And he said, what church do you go to? So she said, Blue Valley Baptist. And he said, oh, that church has the best program. And she asked him what it was, and he said, Cooking with the King. And he said, I was one of those boys. He said, I was in the juvenile detention center many times, and I finally decided to listen. And he said he asked Jesus into his heart, and his whole life changed, and he's active in a church now. So Sonia was just so happy to hear that, and she's recommitted to.
Yes, she has. Has yes. She? Yeah. The rest of that story is that Sonia is still active in Cooking with the King. You know, God, should I quit? Well, I don't know. What do you think? Isn't that great? Isn't that great to hear? All right. You can be seated, Carol. Another one of the ministries that we have been a part of here at Blue Valley Baptist Church is something that is known, at least in the halls of our church, is Food for His Glory. And it allows us to be able to do some really important work in Pune, India. And the McCulleys have been right at the forefront of that. And we've been able to do some basic things here and then actually go there about once a year now, and the McCulleys lead that. Rob, why don't you share just a little bit about Food for His Glory and our ministry in Pune?
Sure. First, I love that story. Thanks for sharing.
Everybody's going to call an Uber driver after this is over, right?
No, it's a great story. So we have been in India the last 5 years, and you all have partnered. Blue Valley has partnered with one piece of that. We serve about three or four different ministries over in Pune. One of them is the Food for His Glory program. It's a kind of a small school, probably about half of this stage, size-wise, and kids have been coming there every day to get help with their school lessons, but also to hear about the gospel. And the Food for His Glory program was something that Stacy worked on with the people here to ensure that those kids, when they showed up every day, had a meal, not just a meal to draw them, to the Trinitarian Center, but quite frankly, a meal to live. The Ramtikti slum, very poor, very impoverished. A lot of these kids are orphaned or just have one parent who's out in the day working, and they were kind of left on their own. So we've been doing that for 4 years. This last year, one of our partners there, Sunil, asked us to come do vacation Bible school at Ramtikti for 100, 200 kids, which is kind of a cool natural progression as I think about what you said, Derek. We've been sharing, with your all's help, very tangible blessings, a sandwich a day. Sunil asked us to share our story through Vacation Bible School. So this treasure that we've been given was not for us to hoard, but mm-hmm. to share. And we had the opportunity to do that. And it was out of Vacation Bible School. We went with 11 people this last year. Sally's here. I see Donna. I think Sandy and Ann may have been in here earlier. But they all got to see this story that Stacy's about to share.
All right, Stacy, you come and tell us about Vacation Bible School this past summer.
I'd love to. We did 5 days of Vacation Bible School. The first day we did was creation. The second day was all of sin and the Ten Commandments. The third day was Jesus coming and Jesus fulfilling prophecy as a young man. And then the fourth day was miracles to prove that Jesus was someone different, that he could do things that other men couldn't. And then the fifth day was Jesus' death and resurrection. When we started, we were told that we would have no more than 200 children attending. So I had ordered 17 dozen crafts from Oriental Trading, which is 204. By Wednesday, we were way over 200, and I was in the littles area, and Rob was out with the older kids. And we would take the crafts from the little kids, the littlest ones, and take them out and give them to the older kids because we felt like they would, they needed the reinforcement more and they would understand better. On the fourth day, which actually happened to be my birthday, we had miracles. So the first two miracles we shared were Jesus healing the lame man and Jesus healing the blind man. We did a craft, and of course we did the same thing, taking from the littles and giving to the older kids. And then we had our Tang break that we have every day. We came back and told the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 and Jesus calming the storm, hence the pinwheel. We got ready to do this craft, and as I'm pulling the things out, I said to myself, well, actually, I was talking to Jesus. I was, you know, the littles are going to want to do this. I feel really bad, Lord, that the littles are going to have to give these to the bigger kids. I gathered up the supplies for the big kids and Rob came in to get them. And we had the papers, the tubes, everything. On the end, there's this little end cap. I handed him this bag of end caps. I have two of these. Sorry, this is... Rob said, where are the rest of the end caps? And I told him I had divided them this morning. This is what we had. There's supposed to be 102 in each bag. And he said, you know, there's like 30 in here. And I said, I don't know. I'll go look, but this is all I think I have. He took them out, and I grabbed the stuff out of my bag for our group. Same thing. And I thought, this isn't near enough. I said, God, would you show me the miracle of the loaves and fishes today? Could you do that for me and for these little kids? They're going to want this. Show them that you love them. Show me that miracle. The ladies and I inside started handing these out, and I am telling you right now, this is the same bag it was when we started. Nothing was taken out, nothing. There were no more, no less than what's in here now. And as we're doing it, we're looking at each other going, what is going on? This is what? And I said, I don't know, but Rob needs them. So I take them out and I said, we've got extras. And he looked at me and he held up the bag and he said, ours hasn't gone down. We have more than enough. Kids were coming up and saying, here's extra end caps. At the end of it all, they get up to go eat lunch. And I'm not kidding you. The ground was littered with end caps, like it was manna. That night I was processing it, and the Father said to me, "You know, Stacy, I am the same God today that I was in the Bible, and you need to trust me, and you need to trust what I'm doing." So all power and all glory to him.
Isn't that an amazing story of God's provision?
One of the things that you discover when you actually move beyond our shores to do ministry in places that aren't the West is that Acts is still alive and well in the rest of the world. We don't see the miracles and the thundering of God in the Western world because, quite frankly, we just don't think we need him as much. We've got our own stuff, and we're pretty self-reliant. We've allowed our hearts to be callous to it. But where other people need to have a sign from God that he's there and real and present, it's still going on. And it is a blessing that our church was able to participate in that this past year in a vacation Bible school in Pune, India. Now, folks, this is part of your story as well. You've now got responsibility with the story that has just been told to bless the nations around you. You have an opportunity with the giving we'll do in a moment to bless the nations around you. God has been good to you so that you can be good with the gospel to other people. Let's not forget that in the year to come.